to organize your amazing ideas into a powerful book, you are in the right place.
At the right time to learn how to write your book.
Hi, I'm Joyce Glass.
And I'm Sherry Lynn Bisbano, and welcome to the Right Hour Nonfiction Tips from the Right Coach team. We are so glad you joined us today.
Welcome to episode 805 of the Right Hour. Do you know how to find the best title for your book? I love creating titles and brainstorming ideas with my clients. That's the fun part of working with my clients, is figuring out titles, and usually they come along while you're working on the book. Robin Colucci shares from her vast experience and research on the best title options for your book. She helps consultants, coaches, and CEO founders write and publish books that help grow their business and further their cause. By integrating sound business strategy into every aspect of the process, she has helped her clients double or triple their incomes within a few weeks of beginning work together, long before the book is out. Her clients have been published by major houses such as Random House, Doubleday, J. Wiley & Sons, Hay House, etc., and others have self-published. Robin is a managing director of eWomen Networks in New Haven and Shoreline East Chapter. She has two kids in college and lives in Old Lyme, Connecticut with her pug. So let Robin help you figure out a best-selling title for your book. Hi, we're so glad you're here today for this episode. We have Robin Colucci, is that how you say it, with us today, and you heard her very fascinating bio already, so we're not going to go into that, but I'd like to hear more about you, Robin. Tell us about you and your journey to becoming a writer.
Well, it's funny, I'd have to say I think I was a writer before I knew how to read, because even when I was a small child, I would scribble and try to pretend that I was writing because I wanted to write right away. And so it's really always been a part of my life. And I wrote a lot of poetry as a child and started writing a little bit of short stories. And then when I got to high school, I got really interested in journalism. Mm-hmm. And I was really interested in politics and social issues and stuff. And so I got interested in journalism. I ended up going to George Washington University as a journalism major. And while I was there, I worked for the school newspaper, the GW Hatchet, and I was also one of the editors on the literary magazine there, the GW Review.
Oh, fun.
And so that was really cool. Yeah. And yeah. I even did like a summer internship at some cheesy weekly in Baltimore.
No. Inquire.
Yeah, I don't remember which one, but it was helpful. You know, it was actually good to get some basic experience. And
right.
And so when I worked at the Washington Post part time as a news
agent. Wow.
Yes.
Very impressive.
And so that was amazing because I was there during the golden years with the, you know, when Ben Bradley was still executive editor and Bob Woodward of Watergate fame was still a reporter.
Mm,
and
wow.
So that, and now, you know, a little bit of close to how old I am. But
and don't look so, it. You don't look it.
Well, bless you. Thank you. And so I was enjoying the process of learning about all this. And then when I was and practicing it, I did some freelancing for the Post while I was there, some freelance articles.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chairman of the journalism department at GW called me into his office and he said, I have recommended you for a job as a research assistant for a New York Times bestselling author.
Ooh.
And if he offers you the job, you should leave the Post to take it. I was like, come on, you know, the Post is the perfect place to be. He's like, just go with an open mind. So I did. And I ended up accepting this job with a gentleman who turned out to be the world's leading expert on espionage and the Cold War.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
And had written many books on that. This guy was David Wise. And
nonfiction.
He wrote the very first expose that was ever written on the CIA and called The Invisible Government. And so I worked for him for 3 years And it was during that time that I learned about how to conceive a book idea, write a book, talk to your agent about the book, mm-hmm. go sell it to a publisher, you know, get it all written, get it promoted. You know, he was on CNN and the Today Show and 2020 when it was still a news show. And so I learned all of these inner workings of the publishing industry.
Wow.
And then, as promised, at the end of my 3 years with him, he helped me get a newspaper reporting job at a mid-sized metropolitan paper. And I did that for a couple of years, but I really didn't like reporting. Like, it was very different to work for a paper that wasn't the Washington Post. You know? Yes. And that's why I'm not naming them, but I'll just say the standards were not quite what I was used to.
Right.
Yeah. And so, and so I left and thought I was done with publishing and started and built and ultimately sold a personal fitness training business. And that was like a 10-year detour.
Wow.
And after I sold it, I started working as a business coach for wellness practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
Because wellness people are like artists, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're great at what they do. They're not so great at marketing or asking for you know, all those things that make a business. And so, and I, for some reason, I'm able to do both. So I started to coach people and help them get some good results. And then my clients started to say, well, you know what I really want to do is write a book. And I was like, oh, totally easy. And so
I knew that.
Right?
We're laughing because most people are like, not for me.
Right? And I'm like, oh, I totally could help you with that. And all of a sudden, like, I'm like, I have this almost like time travel moment where all of a sudden I'm back in David Wise's office, you know, and just everything I learned just was right there for me. And so I started to do that. And then people got really, they got picked up, you know, book deals. I knew how to do a book proposal. So I helped them with that. And I helped them, you know, build their platforms. And I helped them write the book and, you know, write the proposal or whatever needed to be done. And then I remembered, like, I it's not publishing I don't like. It's newspaper reporting. I love work. I love helping people write books.
Right. Yes. It is different. Yes. I'm not a journalism person either. I don't like articles as much either.
Not helping other people tell their story.
Yeah. And the other thing too is, like, you know, when I was a journalist, I had to cover city government. I had to cover night cops, you know, like I had to go out like when there were accidents and, you know, and go get the report from the police, you know, go to the police blotter. And I had to be at boring city council meetings until 10 o'clock at night and then get up, you know, and be there first thing 9 a.m. the next morning. And the pay was horrible.
Yes.
Now, and with book writing coaching, I get to choose what topics I get to choose the people I work with. I get to choose the topics that I help people write on. Mm-hmm. And so it makes my life very fascinating and interesting. And I enjoy the writing process and
the
crafting process. So that's my journey.
Yeah, awesome. Fascinating. Sort of very fascinating
journey.
So we understand the love of coaching writers and helping them on their journey and tell their story. Now, our topic today is titles. So what common mistakes do authors make when trying to create a title for their book or their work?
Yeah, great question. I'd say the biggest mistake that they make is they try to nail down the title before they've written the book.
Right. Yeah, yes.
And, you know, it's like trying to put a label on something that doesn't exist. It's,
I like that.
Right. It's very difficult to name any, you know, to really nail down the title of something that you're not exactly 100% sure what it is. So what I recommend that people do is you have a working title.
Right.
That just reminds you what your topic is, because if you don't have a working title, it's really easy to get into you know, sort of off track and writing down some rabbit trails and stuff like that. So have a working title, but don't agonize over the title. Save that for the end. You know, I'd say 95% of the books that I help people write were on working title until the very last days. I had one instance where they even had the cover design.
Oh, wow.
And my client could not make up her mind about the title. And, you know, so it was literally like down to the last minute that, you know, I finally made a decision.
At that point, it was like, you need to decide.
Don't most traditional publishers want, a lot of them change the title. Or they want to say in the title, don't they? The traditional publishers?
What I have found is, and I think that this is, I think people sometimes mistake the issue of a traditional publisher having final say on things like the cover or the title. Really, it's for the author's own good.
Right.
And like we were just chatting a little bit before the show started, and you were talking about how frustrating it can be when you're working with an author and they come up with a terrible title that they're in love with.
Right.
And your job is to talk them off the ledge and get them back in line. Well, the publisher has the same experience with their inexperienced authors. And so but they've got a lot of money on the line and a lot of investment on the line.
Right.
So they need to be able to say no.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But what I have found is that the general tenor of the entire relationship is they want to collaborate with the author on the title.
Yes, absolutely.
They want you to have the title that you love, as long as it doesn't suck.
Basically. I'm going to quote you on that.
Okay.
I'm going to put that as one of our points.
I had an experience with one of my clients that she had this title that she just felt, you know, was like a download from God for her book. And it wasn't a bad title, but after I read all these, because it was stories about Alzheimer's patients. She had been a nurse practitioner.
Wow.
And I read one of the stories about this family, and this mother said something, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, that's your name. That has to be the name of it. And you could see it actually right back here. It's Just See Me. And that's what, it was so sweet. One of the ladies with Alzheimer's, her daughter had asked her something and the mom answered some off the wall answer that wasn't related to the question. And so she just looked at her mom and she goes, Mom, you're so beautiful. And the mom replied, really? When I look in the mirror, I just see me. And I went, that's your theme of all these stories. Just see me as I am now, not as I was, not as what you thought I could have been, but just see me as I'm now. Mm-hmm. And that's how it evolves. And if you let your story evolve, if you let your book evolve, that title will come jumping out at you. Usually have you had that happen, Robin, where,
oh yeah,
the titles just come jumping out after you've written something or read something.
Yeah. Or sometimes like at a certain point in the writing and you're just like, boom, you know, that's it. That's it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And sometimes it's not till the very, very end. So it can show up. And sometimes like I had one woman come to me and she's like, I want the title of my book to be Resurrecting Venus. It was, and it was all about women's empowerment. And I said, I love it. But you know, we'll keep an open mind, but I love it. And that's the book that came out.
And yeah, I like it.
It was a perfect title. So that happened too, but that's the more rare. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Usually. Yeah.
Yeah, my title changed about three times, and now it's finally getting published. Shine, Don't Whine.
That's cute. Yeah.
I love her title. Yeah,
that's remember? It was True Star Quality and some other
things. Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah, I like that. It's cute.
Yeah, it's perfect.
And I mean, that's the thing. It's like, well, and I can get into the traits a little bit later, but I think the biggest mistake that authors make around their titles is not listening to expert advice, like not thinking that they have it down. And I mean, they might, like I said, I've had clients.
Yeah. Come, but But they've got to be coachable and open, you know, to other options to make sure that they're in the right place.
Yeah, you know, and not just your friends. Your friends don't know either. You really need to talk to people who've worked on, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens or hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books. And know what will sell.
Exactly.
Or at least, you know, have some inkling.
Exactly.
You never know for sure what will sell. But anyway, go on.
Yeah. So what is your favorite name of a book you helped write or edit?
Well, I have a few. That question, I was like, man, I have to go to my stacks and do some research. I think my favorite, and I know you're not going to be able to see video, but this my favorite has to be last year's New York Times bestseller that I coached my client to write, for sure. Because he worked really hard on this. I will not steal that from him.
Congratulations, though, but you were there to coach him. So I have to say, I'm sorry to interrupt, but congratulations on that. That is a great, great feat. It really is.
It was a group effort, and he was phenomenal. He worked so, so hard. But Eat to Beat Disease is the title. Mm-hmm. And the subtitle is The New Science of How Your Body Can Heal Itself.
Mm-hmm. And that's good.
And it's literally a lesson in how to do a title. Like if you break down what he did here, you know, or what we all came up with. And so that's one of my favorites. I have a couple others that I really like.
Yeah, tell us.
Another one is this came out in 2018. And this was self-published, but last time I talked to him, he'd sold over 15,000 copies.
Wow.
Which is like ridiculous.
Wow. That is great. Yeah.
And it's called Getting to Us, Discover the Ability to Lead Your Team to Any Result You Desire.
Oh, that is good too. Yeah.
Really solid. And, you know, this is what I do. I do nonfiction reference types, you know, like learning about something or how to think about something.
Helping people in some form, yeah.
Yeah. And so I had another one that came out last year. And this was kind of fun. This one came out. It's a business book. And it was vying for between Malcolm Gladwell's Talking to Strangers and Elon Musk's book that just came out in 2018, which I'm not remembering the title of right now, but it was those two books and his that were like vying for the number one spot in mismanagement for like all day that his book was released. So I was so proud of him and so happy for him. On Amazon, they were like competing for that number one spot. And this is Go Tech or Go Extinct.
I love that.
How acquiring tech disruptors is the key to survival and growth for established companies. So, you know, very clear, you know exactly who it's for, mm-hmm. you know exactly what it is. And anyway, but we'll get into the specifics on why those titles are great later.
Yeah, and in fact, you have seven traits of best-selling titles. Can you expound on those? Can you tell us what
they
are?
Absolutely. So, I mean, basically the seven traits are actually the title and the subtitle, right? And so the title is obviously that main statement, like go tech or go extinct, eat to beat disease, getting to us. Those are the main title. And the main title has a very specific purpose, which is to sell the reader on picking up the book. Right? So that's got to be quick. It's got to catch your eye. It's got to be memorable. And so the subtitle is supposed to tell the reader why they should read the book. So it's really, if you think about it, the subtitle is really a brief benefit statement, mm-hmm. right? So it's like, if you read the book, what are you going to get? You're going to discover the ability to lead. You're going to learn about how to keep your traditional company alive in a tech world. You're going to learn how to save your own life by what you choose to eat, right? And so we're going to say it in a way that's, again, easy to grasp in that quick second, because you really, if you think about somebody scrolling through Amazon or wandering through a bookstore, you don't get a lot of time, right?
Have about 5 seconds to capture their attention.
Right. So there's a few traits of a title that sells, right? It's punchy, it has to be short and impactful. Mm-hmm. Right? So bam, you know, get my attention. It needs to be easy to spell. And this is really important for Google, because that's how people find books now, right? They're, if you give them, and this is where, like we, what we chatted about a little bit before we started the show, is if you do made up words or weird words with weird spelling, it's going to be harder for people to find your book.
Right. Definitely.
You need to be direct. So you just want to get to the point, right? Eat to beat disease. It's not eat to feel good and sleep better. And yeah. And you know, lose some weight. And no, it's eat to beat disease. So we know exactly what it is. Right.
And you, those are all the wonderful side effects, you know, feeling better, sleeping
better. Exactly, exactly. But, you know,
in the big letters, eat.
Eat. That's right. Eat. I'm now motivated. Anything about eating.
I'm motivated.
I'm in. I'm right with you. And the last trait is memorable. There's some interesting things about making something memorable that I want to share with you. But before I do that, I want to talk a little bit about this idea of keeping it punchy and short. Mm-hmm. Because I'm kind of geeky when it comes to books and publishing. So I like to try to decode, you know, what's actually going on when we see, you know, I try to look for patterns and see what's actually happening in the industry. So I looked at New York Times bestseller lists. And I still do this, by the way, you know, going way, way back. And then I checked all the best-selling books of all time. And I looked at their titles. And my question was, what do they have in common?
Right.
And so I'm going to share with you the few things that they have in common in terms of length.
Okay.
So any week, you pick any week, I challenge anyone listening to this, open up the New York Times bestseller list page and check the list. And this is what you're going to find just about every week. I really haven't found it not to be true. 85%, this is when they used to have 20 on the list. So it's a little harder to come up with 85% now that they only really list 10. But 85% of all national bestselling titles will contain no more than 6 syllables.
Mm-hmm.
So eat to beat disease is 5.
Yeah.
Okay. 90 to 95% of all best-selling titles will contain 8 or less. And once you get into 10 syllables or less, you have now like 95 to 99% of books will have fewer than 10 syllables in their title. Mm-hmm. There are a few exceptions like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance or How to Win Friends and Influence People, but they will be very, very difficult to find. So whatever you do, make sure that your title is like 10 is your max.
Yeah.
And six to eight is your sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's really important. And then, you know, you want the title to get people's attention, right? You want it to kind of pattern interrupt. So like Go Tech or Go Extinct. It's like, what do you mean go extinct? What are you talking about?
Like I want a dinosaur.
what does tech have to do with extinction? You know, it's like, wah! So it makes them go, whoa, you know? So that can be a good strategy.
Right.
And then, of course, like I said, just being direct to the point. I already talked about that. But here's the thing about being memorable. And I think this is something that a lot of people don't necessarily pay close attention to, but it's all over the place. So we have a collective sort of understanding in our culture, right? We have things that we've heard that we have an association with.
Right.
And if you take something that's already a common sort of known phrase and you put a twist on it,
mm-hmm.
then you're raising the memorability quotient of your book, like just by, you know, to the nth degree.
Yes.
And like getting to us, what does that, can you recall what book that that sort of hints at?
That getting friends, the
getting to
the bottom. I don't know. I was thinking getting to the bottom.
Getting to yes.
Getting to yes. Big, oh, getting to us. Oh,
big,
yeah. Okay.
Big bestseller on negotiation, right? So
yes.
And for people who are reading business books and buying business books, they know exactly what getting to yes is. They probably have it on their shelf already.
And now that you say it, I've heard of that, but it wasn't coming to mind.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, you're a little young. You're a little young probably.
But then, not as
it was like, here's one that you might definitely be too young. But Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I've read that.
Right, but do you know what he was playing off of in the title? It's a TV show.
Oh, okay, yes. I can't think of it.
This is long before Joyce was born.
No, Joyce looks really good for her age.
I don't think Joyce, I don't even know
she
if Joyce
was 20 years younger
before.
Than she was.
But so there was a very popular TV series in the 70s called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. No, called,
really?
No, called Rich Man, Poor Man.
That's what I thought. I was going to say.
I've never heard of that.
Rich Man, Poor Man.
I was a little girl in the 70s. We'll put it that way.
Oh, okay. so here's the thing. This was brilliant because Rich Man, Poor Man was on in the 70s, and his target reader was growing up in the 70s. So, and was probably around 12 or 13. In the 70s, which would have been like right around the time they might have, you know, just started to get an awareness.
That's me.
Right. So when his book came out, you know, it wasn't as long ago. So that was a brilliant, you can do a play. Here's one of my favorites is
Do you have another one? Because I love doing plays on words.
Yeah. One of my favorites is Chelsea Handler's memoir. Are You There, Vodka? It's Me, Chelsea. You remember what book that would have been a play on?
Are You There, God?
It's yes. Me, Margaret. Again, speaking right into the demographic of her readers,
mm-hmm.
right? Like all of us who are about her age, right? We grew up with that. I mean, who didn't have that book in eighth grade, right? I mean, so that's another good example. The Power of Habit.
Mm-hmm.
Power of Now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a device that's used very frequently and very successfully.
Yes.
So you can have a twist on something that's already in the collective.
Yeah. I love that.
Incredible.
Like you said, it makes it very memorable. And like, if that is your demographic, they're going to get it, you know, they're going to understand. Yeah. This is when I realized I was getting older when I went to speak to a ladies group and they didn't know there was some younger girls in the group and they didn't know who Ernest was. Remember Ernest from the,
oh my God. Yes.
The comedian.
Yes.
You know, and these
from
girls were like,
commercial that was,
huh?
Wasn't it a commercial that he did?
He did some shows.
He was on a show.
He had a show, but I think he also did some funny
like Comcast or one of those.
Yeah, I know exactly. Like at first, I didn't get it, and then like
or something. Yeah,
yeah, and yeah. That was the thing. They had no clue, and I was like, "Oh my God, I'm getting old."
I know. Like at first, I didn't get it, and then his goofy face just like flashed into my mind, and I was like, "Oh, Ernest! Oh my gosh, yes,
yeah."
And you know, this, we could go on a bunny trail on this, but I think a great future podcast would be how words have changed over the years. And
oh, that's a great idea.
Because maybe Robin, you might want to help us with that, because I think of record,
right?
Oh yeah,
or turntable. You've been in the writing field long enough to know how verbiage has changed. So maybe we could do that.
One thing that is hysterical when I talk to some of my younger clients and I explain to them that cut and paste is because that's what we used to cut paper and paste new place. And they look at me like, what?
But then you've got the other end of the spectrum, my parents, when I tell them to cut it, my dad goes, where does it go?
Right.
It's on the end of your mouse, okay? Just imagine it's there. It's right there. And when you hit paste, it's going to magically appear again.
Come back like magic.
Yeah, there's the verbiage, and now the verbiage changes. I mean, it changes weekly.
I mean, you know, like, who would have ever thought the word Google could be a verb? I mean, that's...
I Googled it. That's right.
I Googled it.
But and it was.
I Google. I have Googled. I am
Googled. I ask Google.
Right. we can conjugate the entire verb for Google. It's true. Language has really been impacted, especially by technology, for sure.
It's interesting. It's really interesting.
So those were the traits of best-selling titles. And then the rest of the traits, the other few traits are, I think there's like four of the title, and then there's three of the subtitle. So, so the subtitle is all about benefits, right? So basically, you've got to communicate very quickly that whatever that pain is, this is for nonfiction, but you know, whatever the pain is that the reader is in, or whatever that thing that's keeping them up at night that they want, that you have a solution to help them get closer to it, to help close that gap.
Right.
Or your subtitle has to be about what they don't want. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this tech or go at stink about the key to survival and growth for established companies. It's kind of like hinting right at what they want and what they don't want. Like,
you know, they don't want to go extinct.
Right. You don't want
to survive.
Right. Exactly. So you also want to be clear, like, where are you taking me? Right. One of the things that I talk about a lot is you want to avoid the white van approach, which is basically like, if you imagine that you're standing on a corner and somebody pulls up really fast and slams on the brakes, and you know, a white van pulls up really fast, slams on the brakes, somebody swings open the door and says, "Get in." Like,
I see too many detective movies. I'm not getting
right? in. You're not getting in that vehicle because you don't know who's driving it. You don't know where it's going. You don't know if you'll ever be seen again. Right. You want that subtitle to communicate very clearly, this is the journey that I'm inviting you to enter. So it's more like you're pulling up in a nice big limousine bus that says New York City or San Francisco on the front, you know, and the person, and when the door opens, the person can look in and see cushy seats and hear nice music, and they see a full bar. That's the experience you want to create with that subtitle. So, you know, discover the ability to lead your team to any result you desire.
That's where I want to be.
Right? Exactly what I feel relieved just reading the subtitle. I want to feel more relief. I'm going to buy this book. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and be brief again. Now, I've also, of course, geeked out on this. So here's the length of your subtitle, half a tweet.
Yep. I like that.
70 characters with spaces, including spaces.
Okay.
70 characters. If you're right in there, you know, you could be a couple spaces over, you could be several under, but that's your sweet spot for the subtitle in terms of length.
I wanted to ask you, Robin, can the subtitle, can you say the journey to or the quest for the, is it best to do something a little less obvious?
Well, like for what kind of a book would you say the journey?
Nonfiction. Like I was going to put on my book. I don't want to keep talking about my book, but
that's okay.
Wine Don't Wine, The Quest for Star Quality, or The Quest to Stop Complaining, or The Quest to Shine. I forgot exactly how I had it. But so they know that the book is a quest or a journey. It's not all just...
No. I'm glad you asked, because what you want your subtitle, like the journey is implied. The subtitle should be about the result.
Yeah.
So the subtitle...
Nobody wants to buy a journey. Nobody wants to buy a journey. You've got to meet them with what they want. And like, they understand implicitly that the journey begins reading the book. But so it would be like Shine, Don't Whine. It would be... Overcome your head trash and and get what you want out of life. And of course, I'm totally spitballing and not recommending that, but specifically. But
yeah, I don't have a subtitle because I couldn't figure one out.
Yeah,
I was going to have the quest, and I'm so glad I didn't do that, and I'm glad I asked you that question because Joyce and I help a lot of people as well, and we don't want to lead them on a journey to use the journey or the quest on their book titles.
No, I wouldn't. I mean, you're wasting characters there. You know, you're
okay. Right. Thank you. That's really good information. Thank you.
I would just say, like, get over your past and learn how to love your life or something.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. But you just want to, like, whatever the tone is that you want, but you just focus on the result that if they read the book and follow the advice, then they are more likely to get that result, right? I mean, like for a dating and relationships book, nobody wants to read a subtitle that says, heal your relationship with your parents, forgive all your past lovers, journal a lot, go to therapy, and meet the love of your life, right? I'm not buying that book. That might actually be what I end up doing, right? But I'm not buying that book, right? So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Resurrect Venus.
Wake up, honey. I'm me a man. No,
the girl stop apologizing and girl wash your face. The same kind of concept is she is taking them on a journey, but she's not talking about that in the title.
Yeah. She's not saying the journey to washing your face.
Yeah. So I love that. You know, so can you give us the bullet points on the traits again?
Okay. Yes. I know they're quite, okay. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to look at my notes so I don't miss any here.
Is this on your website?
No. Mm-mm. No, they have to listen to your podcast to get it or
that's it.
or something. Okay. Here we go. Punchy, short and impactful, easy to spell. That's for Google. Remember, that's how people are going to find your book. So don't make it. I don't think Siddhartha by Herman Hesse would have done very well in 2020. direct, to the point, and memorable. That's for your title. Mm-hmm. And then your subtitle traits are, sorry about this.
That's all right.
I'm rattling them off. Benefits, 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 right? So this is all about focusing on the outcome that the reader wants. And then again, just be clear and be brief, right? So no white bands, tell them exactly where you're taking them and do it within 70 characters.
And eliminate kind of what we call fluff words too. Mm-hmm. You know, the journey could be, I consider that fluff because that's not your benefit. That's what's going to happen when they do this.
And that's a whole nother topic. Like, you know, there's certain words I just forbid in titles, and journey is definitely there. Transformation,
overdone,
enlightenment, awakening, like all these words, exactly. They're so overdone that people can't hear them anymore.
Right.
They're what I call the eye roll words.
Yeah. Because if people, I've been through a transformation. I don't need that.
Yeah. And it's more like if some, you know, my journey to transformation, you know, like rolling my eyes.
I'm rolling my eyes
for those. Right. But because it's really like, who cares, you know? And the problem is it's been done and then redone and then overdone and then done again.
Right.
And so you want to stay away from those words that have become cliches of themselves.
Correct.
Like, yeah. The.
Well, the has been done a lot too, but it's still very useful.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about your personal writing time. Do you have time to write in between helping clients? And when you do write, is there a consistent time you write? Is it daily? Or so give us some things.
That's a great question. Yeah, I do write. I do my own writing. I try to do, most days I succeed, in doing morning pages, which if you've ever read Julia Cameron's Artist Way, you know, just those 3 pages every morning. And I really find that kind of just helps me clear my mind so that I can do the day.
Right.
That can be very helpful. And then, and I do write my own work. But when I'm writing content that I'm going to either publish or perform, I do a little, I've been known to do a little stand-up comedy here and there.
I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, that's okay. I'll send you a link.
do that. Please do.
Yeah. And so when I'm writing for my own stuff, I walk around in the world, and then there's this sort of like buildup, and then once or twice a week, I'll sit down and just vomit it all out, you know? So I'll write nothing, 2,500 words, yeah. nothing, 1,500 words. And, so I can, you know, average about 4,000 words a week, but I'm not like one of those hour a day or 2 hours a day. 'Cause once I'm in it, like I just kind of, I'm in that groove.
Right.
And then I just try to ride that groove as long as I can.
Right.
And that's just what works for me. Like when I wrote my book, How to Write a Book That Sells You, which just barely made it in my syllables. I actually had to rewrite it several times because I knew I couldn't exceed my syllables because then I would lose all my credibility. but yeah, I would just sit down and just, you know, do like 2,000 words in one sitting.
Well, that's why we love to ask, because I mean, this is what we try to explain to everybody. Everybody's different. Everybody's got a different approach and different schedules, and you've got to figure out what works for you. And, you know, some people being super disciplined is great. So that's what I love to ask people, because I want people to know not every writer gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and bams out, you know, 10,000 words in a day. You know, people do it different ways.
Oh yeah. I don't know any writers, including some of the most successful, that are writing 10,000. Maybe Stephen King is writing 10,000 words a day. That I could believe.
Yeah. Well, I think Jerry Jenkins writes a good bit. I can't remember what he said. Do you remember what he said?
He might, because he keeps up with his guild and he's doing all that as well. So he's writing a lot of information and content, not just his books.
True. Yeah,
I think the hard thing when you're a writing coach, I don't know, like for me anyway, I think the hardest thing is getting in the right zone to write when I've just spent my entire, you know, day or week helping other people write. And
right.
So, you know, that, I think that is the challenge.
It is.
But generally when I'm writing for myself, I'm usually writing something completely different. Mm-hmm. So, that's not related to my work. And I think that helps, because I think if I was writing about how to write, you know, now my book is out. So I, you know, I've done that already, but I think if I was still doing that, I don't know, because it's like, that's all I talk about all day, you know? So
right. you gotta go somewhere else. It does help.
Like I read 60,000 words a week easily with mm-hmm. my clients, but it's like how much more energy.
Audiobooks. That's what I do.
Right.
That's what
I do. I do audiobooks now. And I've also found, like, I love the summer because I still, like, when I'm reading on the beach, it's a different enough context that it doesn't feel at all like work. Like, it's really hard for me to read from home because I work from home.
Right.
Yeah. And it just, even if it's, you know, a fabulous book, that has nothing to do with it. It's just hard.
I love audiobooks, especially when I'm at the gym, so I don't have to listen to their music.
Yeah.
But anyway, Robin, I've really learned a lot and so glad we're talking to you. And you've really encouraged me. But do you have any advice for writers and any more encouragement for those who are struggling, either with their title or just struggling to write in general?
Mm-hmm. I would say if you're struggling to write in general, you probably are, I think it's one of two things. You're probably just not feeling totally clear about mm-hmm. what it is that you intend to say. Mm-hmm. So I think the thing to do would be to, you know, maybe revisit that a little bit and just sort of think about the chapter you're about to write and at least jot down some bullet points that you want to hit upon,
right.
You know, and then go back to it. And then kind of on the flip side is, you know, you might stop writing because you fear that everything that you're writing is awful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is the biggest stop. And as somebody who's, I'm in the middle of writing a new creative piece right now, and I am absolutely in the tunnel. I can maybe see a tiny speck of light. I'm hoping it's the other side of the tunnel. I'm hoping it's not the oncoming train, but no.
I love that.
No, but, and it's like, but I've learned over, you know, decades of doing this work that the only way that you just have to write through that, you have to just, if you can just have a little bit of faith, it doesn't have to be good. If you just make the goal to get through writing the first draft as quickly as you can, because nothing is great in the first draft.
Nope.
Nothing. And I guarantee you, you ask all of the writers, if you could go back in time and talk to every single writer that's ever lived that you admire, they will tell you that their first draft sucked. Mm-hmm. No first draft is great. Nope. So you just write through and just have the faith that you can clean it up later.
Right.
And I know it's hard to do because I've been at this for over 30 years and I still struggle with it. But, you know, that's the only way to get it done is to write. And, you know, even as a coach, I'm sure, Joyce, that you go through this. Like, I have a ton of value and expertise. I'm going to put you in. We have, right, people like us, we have a ton of expertise to offer. We have so much to give, but we cannot help you if you don't send us anything.
Right.
Right.
I cannot make it beautiful if you don't have it something
right. Written down. Like, I need you to give me content so that I can help you make it better. And it's up to the author to extract that value from the writing coach. Right. And the only way to do that is to write. Mm-hmm. Because then everything, the whole world will open up to you. If you're wise enough to have a coach, which I really do not attempt at home without help. You know, this is like, right? It's very, very hard, like, to do it.
It is. It took me 4 years to write my first book because I had, I read books and took courses and webinars and all this stuff, but there was still nothing that could kind of like gel and kind of just get me out there. And finally, I had a business coach practically dare me and said, hey, just write it. And then start emailing out to your list because it was a devotional. And she sent an email a day at a time. So it scared the bejeebies out of me because I'd only written like maybe 2 or 3 weeks and I had putzed around doing this for a long time. And she's like, just get it done and put a deadline on it. And when I did, I got it done in 3 months because I didn't want people not, you know, getting to week 5 and like, oh, sorry, I don't have the rest of it.
Exactly. So. Exactly. That's right. So whatever, so having somebody, knowing that somebody's expecting to read it can help. And, you know, don't expect to be good. I mean, that's what coaches are for. That's what editors are for.
Yep. If you saw my first try at writing my book, it's a Christian living book, but it's also a Bible study. A best-selling author looked at it. And he said, I hope you don't hate me, but this needs a lot of work. If I wanted to read the Bible, I just would have read the Bible. You need stories. And because of his consistent honesty, and he never attacked me, but he said, your writing needs a lot of work, but I see the gem in all that dirt. Mm-hmm. And I worked hard and listened to what he had to say. I mean, I still have a lot to learn as a writer, but my writing has come leaps and bounds because I listened when I could have I wanted to crawl under a rock and die because of what not because he was attacking me, but my writing's horrible, but it's everybody's writing's horrible. So that's great advice, Robin, unless you can
keep that in mind.
Nobody's writing is perfect.
And everybody, you know, I'm constantly learning. I mean, I hire writing coaches to help me when I'm writing outside my genre. Like, I know what my wheelhouse is. You know, my wheelhouse is nonfiction, world-changing books. Okay, but if I'm writing comedy, I work with a coach. Because I can be funny, but doing a show is a totally different thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And so it's like I hire coaches for my writing when, you know, when I'm writing outside, I hired a coach to help me write my TED Talk that's going to be coming up this spring.
Oh, I want to see it.
I'll send you the link.
Oh, please do.
Can you tell us what it's going to be about?
Yes, it's going to be about the question of, are books still relevant? And of course, my answer is yes. I'll be sharing about why and how.
Is Amazon still selling books? Let's see.
Yeah, but you know, there's that whole conversation about, oh, books are becoming passe and nobody reads anymore. And, you know, and it's just complete bunk. It's just not true.
It is.
And so I'll be talking about that. Yeah.
Please be sure to forward it to us, because we will tweet it. We will put it on Facebook. We'll get it out there for you.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Seriously.
It's great. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you being here today, Robin, and you gave us some wonderful tips, and we'll be sharing that with our listeners in our show notes. And just thank you for everything you did to help us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Write Hour. Our goal is to help you achieve your writing dreams.
You are one step closer to write your book.
Learn how to get the book out of your head with the 4 steps we teach our clients. Sign up for the free email series at thewritecoach.biz. The link is in the show notes.
The 4 steps help you clarify your focus, create and organize your content, and complete your book. We share tips on the writing process, and you can download the writing planner to track your progress.
Don't let fear and overwhelm keep you from writing your book.
It's time to write your book.